Hey everybody, this is Alex Lindsay, and we are once again spanning the globe. We've got Ron Brinkman all the way down in Redondo Beach. Is that correct, Ron?
Hermosa Beach.
Hermosa Beach. Yes, one of those beaches down there in the LA area, and also Mike Seymour from FX Guide. And Mike, you are way across the world, right?
Yeah, we're at Shanghai Film Studios in China, filming with fxphd.com.
Nice. What are you doing?
It's actually pretty cool project. We're placing a whole bunch of landmarks from around the world in Shanghai. So from the Arc de Triomphe to buildings from Sweden and Korea and all over the world, and they're ending up down in the old French Quarter of Shanghai.
That sounds cool.
When you say placing buildings, what, is that as an effects thing or as?
Yeah, and as an effects thing. So the buildings were, and Alex, you'll appreciate this because I know you've done a lot of it. It's we're doing basically like photogrammetry of the buildings in their various locations and HDRs and stuff, and then matching them into the plate. But because, of course, we've got the flexibility from having reconstructed the 3D geometry and projecting on it, we can then make them line up with the plates we're shooting here in Shanghai.
And
are you going to all these locations to get these buildings?
We've actually had 68 locations in the world already done. So this is the last one. This is where the plates go into. But no, it was the what we call our post grads, our students on PhD, who have done the HDRs and the photogrammetry around the world.
Yeah, I thought this was just an excuse to get a world tour.
I know, that's great.
Sounds like a good idea, though.
Yeah, I was like, I got to do that.
If you want me to go, do a few other dozen buildings, let me know.
I must admit, John volunteered, my business partner, John volunteered to do Paris. So I was like, oh, okay. All right. I get it.
One of my long-term things is that I go to Zimbabwe about once or twice a year, and because we're slowly getting ready to put a production facility there, and I go to Great Zimbabwe, which is probably the largest man-made stone structure south of the Nile, and it's just an incredible place, but it's never been visualized in 3D, and so I think I've shot over the last, to do roughly the same thing, well, to rebuild it in 3D, I'm trying to do all the photogrammetry stuff, and I think I've shot maybe, 20, well, let's see, well, I wouldn't say, about 20 or 30 minutes of just raw data with a video camera to try to use Matchmaker Pro or something like that to grab the data, and shot probably 3,000 to 4,000 images of that area to do a lot of that stuff there. So, but it's a lot harder when it's all ruins.
yeah. Well, we had the problem is that that Shanghai's a pretty busy place, really. So we had to get up at dawn to shoot the way we wanted to shoot. So,
now, what are you shooting with?
We're shooting digitally. We're coming back in about just after NAB in April for a 35mm shoot here. So
very
should
good.
Be fun.
Yeah, we were doing test shoots over the weekend with the 950, and I built my first. I didn't build it by myself, but I built my first Jimmy Jib. I was very excited about that. So I'm not.
Oh yeah, totally.
I'm not known as a physical guy. You know, I mean, like I'm not. I'm on set a lot, but I don't actually have to build the stuff. And we ordered a little jib, and somehow, I guess because of supplies, we ended up with this 18-foot Jimmy jib with a remote head and all this other stuff, and it was a learning experience. So
literally, when I was at I think you call it school or college, and I wanted to. And I was doing my, filmmaking with a Super 8 camera. I built a, converted my old billy cart into a crane and a dolly rig, and had a ball making that thing. But you just learn a lot about parallelograms when you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's amazing how much of a difference, because we're just doing a bunch of test shots for training and for examples and stuff for the Pixel Core, and it was amazing how much fun how much fun it was. I mean, you think that dollies are fine and it's all fine and dandy, but there's something different about when you start throwing that camera on a jib. Other than the adrenaline of having my camera, my big expensive camera floating around on a jib that's held together to the base with one screw. So,
well, you know, when we were shooting recently with the Genesis camera, it was so heavy that we had to get bodybuilding weights to be the counterbalance on the Milo rig. So if you look, there are all these dumbbells on the back of it just to weigh it out.
I think our counterbalance was like 160 pounds. Yeah, so it was a lot of data there. Anyway, so that's all of our fun. What are you doing for fun, Ron? See, we've talked about Mike and myself, but what are you doing? You just got back from Germany.
Yeah, I just got back from a month on the road, so I'm mostly recovering. I'm doing laundry for fun.
Did you get a lot of photos?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it wasn't quite as focused a photo trip. I was running around quite a bit. I was at the IBC show at the beginning of the trip, which was, the sort of NAB of mm-hmm. Europe broadcast kind of stuff. And then the end of the trip was Photokina, which is all photography related stuff, which I'm a big photo head also.
I'm super excited about by the way, I mean, speaking of IBC, because we haven't had, you know, we haven't talked for a while, but super excited about, I know it seems mundane, but Final Cut 5.12 was a very exciting upgrade for us.
Yeah, good
so
stuff.
We got Conduit running in it, so we're just, we're close to release, so that should be fun. That gives everybody a secret inside to our little process, but this week we were all out there downloading. I have to admit, I just finished. I'm fresh off of Battlestar Galactica. You know, I thought that I was. Did you guys all get to sit down and enjoy it?
Yeah, I watched the 2-hour season premiere.
Now, did you watch it on TV or did you watch it from iTunes?
I watched it off iTunes, which was my first. I downloaded the little summary guide from, I guess, the last two seasons because I had never watched it before. And I always heard good things about it, and then so I downloaded that, which was the little freebie, and then I downloaded this the first, I guess it was one or two episodes, but they all played as one big episode from this season, the season premiere. So, you know,
I should have
doing the iTunes thing.
Yeah, you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was easy. It was, for the most part, it was great. As I was watching this, you know, every time we're getting ready to talk about some movie on the podcast here, it's, you know, you go into it kind of trying to keep an eye open for compositing flaws or weird things in 3D or, you know, right, whatever. And it's not quite as easy whenever you're only downloading something that's, 600 by 400 or something like that.
I do have to admit that I like the luxury of being able to stop and start it when I wanted to write notes, because, I mean, usually I have this little... Yeah. I have one of those pens with a little light in it, you know, like the little red pen.
Yeah.
So when you click on it, it'll do it just so you can write it in the dark. And so that's what I have in the theater when I'm doing this. And but I still feel like, I mean, half the stuff is totally illegible because I'm trying to write it quickly and it's all just, you know, dark.
I don't even have one of those pens, so I totally write in the dark.
And then you look at it, you're like, what was it? I was talking about edges, but I don't know what, you know. And so it was nice to start and stop, but I do admit that there was some stuff that, you know, I looked at and I said, well, I mean, there's some obvious stuff for me, but there was a lot of stuff that I wouldn't know whether they were doing a great job or not, just because I can't tell.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not, you know, the quality is still lacking a little bit. Is that show broadcast in high def? Does anybody know? Or
I think it is.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay.
I think the only way you're going to get a hold of that, though, is like through TorrentSpy or something like that. So
yeah,
so it's and so I downloaded the same. And did you download it from iTunes, Mike?
Yeah. Actually, I got addicted to it last season because one of the great advantages of getting nominated for an Emmy is they suddenly put you on the Emmy list and you get about a million DVDs sent to you. And they sent us the box set of last year's Battlestar Galactica. Oh, nice. And it is, totally addictive. So
I will definitely say that the story, I mean, this is the first one I've seen. I didn't even see the backstory. So I just like launched into this going, well, I'm just reviewing the effects anyway. But I have to say that the storyline, even given the fact that I barely know what the hell's going on, was still great. I mean, I really enjoyed it.
It's very compelling. Although, yeah, man, it's bleak.
Yeah.
are all these episodes that dim? I mean, I was just, I think I'd slip my wrist if I watched it every week.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the great thing about it, right? Because its place in the kind of continuum is there are many people that came to it from Star Trek in terms of production.
Right.
And, of course, Star Trek was just so eternally optimistic in its view of the future. And I think the only way they could have made Battlestar work is the way they did because, you know, you annihilate most of the human race. You just can't make it a perky, fun lighthearted romp, can you?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, no.
It was well done. I mean, it was. I was impressed.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. Now I know we're on a tight turn because Mike has to catch a plane from Shanghai to Sydney. I think, is that right, Ryan?
No, I'm off to Hong Kong next.
To Hong Kong, and so we're gonna jump in here and make sure that Mike gives us his two cents on the effects. What do you think of the effects?
Look, I thought they were really good. I think that we should probably start by just identifying a couple of things that were and weren't CG, just so we know what we're talking about, as a frame of reference. And so there were some things that I think we can all guess were visual effects, like the chopsticks through the neck, which, you know, I thought were really good. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, I love the, I love the color grading, because I think the whole thing has a really good feel to it. But the Cylons themselves are probably the most obvious CG element, the robots. And in the in this one, we have some real close-ups. So there's a couple of points where people actually come up to guards at checkpoints, and they're really quite large in frame and right close. And I think that work is superb. I do think there is a couple of occasions that they're pushing the 3D tracking so hard that there was a bit of float. But the CG itself, I think, is really good.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of tracking issues in a couple of the wider shots, but overall, and I mean you're right, they went very close a couple times on the what do they call the
Cylons,
robot versions?
Cylons.
Are they not all Cylons though, or
they're all Cylons? They're just human Cylons and metal Cylons.
All right. Yeah. So the metal Cylons anyway are they were good. Does anybody know, or any? I mean, usually when you do something like this, you tend to sort of be smart about what you do CG, and what you do is practical, you know, animatronic or even guys in a suit if you can get away with it. And I don't know where they, you know, they didn't seem to be drawing that line too much. It seemed to be CG in a lot of places.
Well, I think they're all CG.
Yeah, I think all the Cylons are CG. I felt like there was obviously a couple tracking issues here and there. It was hard for me to figure out whether the textures were really working or not at the resolution that I have.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether some of the stuff looked a little flashed. I felt like they were a little light in the scene, but I can't tell, you know, in what I was looking at. I did feel like the weight was not quite right. You know, I feel like these things are really heavy. And I didn't feel like they just didn't feel like they impacted the scene as they were working their way through it in that way. That's a typical thing. I just don't feel, you know, I felt like if I was going to do this, I would have put a lot of weights on somebody and motion captured them and then worked from there.
They do have a non-human kind of walk cycle that they use, which I'm sure was intentional, and it would be a little harder to get that sort of different sort of balance off of it if you were trying to motion capture somebody, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know how. I guess I just don't know how necessary. I just didn't.
I agree. I don't think it buys you much.
I just felt like it bothered me. You know, I mean, it was the problem with it. It was, you know, as far as the motion. The other things that are obviously, I think, CG is, of course, when you look at all the ships and everything else. And I thought that are they Vipers? Is that what they're calling them? The little ships?
Yeah.
I thought for the most part, within the resolution that I could see, I felt like the smaller ships actually, held up pretty well. Some of the camera work was a little odd for me, but the larger ships, I think, and this is a typical, and one thing I want to say is that, you know, I'm particularly sensitive to this.
you're gonna go off about specular highlights not having enough breakup, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, I'm particularly, I will admit that I've done a lot of spaceships. If there's one thing I've done, it's a lot of spaceships. And B, if there's, the budget, you always have to look at this. The budget is much different for a TV.
Yeah, it's episodic television.
Yeah, episodic television. We're talking about 2 hours of footage. I mean, I worked on a film that had 2 hours of footage, and the budget was probably somewhere between 10, you know, 10 and 15 times larger, you know, to work on it. So, but there's a lot of things about textures that really drive me nuts when I watch, specifically when it comes to big ships, and that is really high contrasty texture maps for there's kind of this thing that you do with spaceships where you build a kind of a map that's got the plating, you know, all that plating, that subtle plating that's supposed to be on top of it. It rarely looks good, in my opinion, when it's really contrasty. You know, because it's just this thing that has all these really high, you know, we're going to add a lot of contrast because it adds a lot of detail. And I just find that it looks a lot more believable and a lot more effective when it's kind of a it's this soft thing that kind of adds, you know, add the detail to what should be generally geometry. Like, I, you know, don't really think people should use texture maps for plating, you know, on a ship.
Yeah,
you know, that they don't really work. You know, I mean, really all you're doing on a ship that big is you build everything. I mean, in my opinion, you build everything in geometry and then you spec it, and the specular is going to be the biggest thing that you're going to do that's going to make it look real, in my opinion.
There's a couple of things about that are signature aspects of their VFX that I don't know how much they bore out in this double ep, but from the first miniseries, which is that they've tried to film the CGI as if it was filmed by a cameraman. So they're often pulling focus, they're often missing it, or pulling a zoom, or they're just trying to get it like it was recorded to give it realism. And it's sometimes grating when you first get, once you get into it, it's great because it's nice to see someone being different. And there are little touches that they do like that I really appreciate. I don't know, you remember there's a, actually, I don't know, it might be in the next step, but there's a shot where there's a Viper monitoring outside Earth, New Caprica, listening. And they just have it floating, and it's floating at a weird angle because in space.
This episode, I like that. You know, there was actually part of, there was sort of a closer up on the planet, and then it did this sort of zoom back, and you saw the ship, and yeah, it was just sort of hanging in frame. I thought that was nice.
And I will say that a lot of that creative stuff, I like all of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think all of that stuff works really, really well.
Yeah, and there were other times where they would, you know, there's another one I remember where they started on, you know, one of the bigger ships, and the camera was cocked, you know, to the side, but quite a bit. It was a fairly strong Dutch angle, and then it sort of quickly straightened itself as if it had sort of, you know, just captured this, and then they got into position and everything. And I agree. I think that's great stuff. And you know, the pulling focus is really nice because it definitely puts stuff into the scene and gives you a sense of depth to it and everything.
Yeah,
and I think it's grittier, and that's what the show is. And then we've always discussed this in the past, haven't we? That idea of applicability to the story, that, you know, because there's something here I'm going to throw at you, which I think is really interesting. Actually, came out of there's a really good podcast, which is basically a commentary track of the whole show. That instead of like on a DVD, you get a commentary track from the producer. They just actually publish it as a podcast, so that the next day, if you like, you can listen to the ep. And watch it over and get commentary. And I got this from that. And it was one, I don't know, I'd love to know if you guys noticed this, but did it bug you that they were in trucks and they had trucks on the planet?
That they had trucks?
Because the producers had this huge dilemma, right? The producers had a dilemma. They wanted to have people in trucks and moving around and doing stuff, right? And they were like, well, we could theoretically make them some kind of hovercraft because it's in the future, blah, blah. The trouble is, we're going to use a lot of budget up on that, and it's going to take you out of the show because, you know, well, look, cool effect. So they deliberately chose to use mechanical trucks as we know them today, even though if you think about the logic of it, that's kind of skewed. And I think it was a really interesting point they went back and forward on. It's like, should you spend the money and make them sci-fi, but then you're going to take people out of the story because they're going to be noticing them, or are you better staying? And
bothered me at all, though. They're living, the refugees are living out of tents, for crying out loud, and it's obviously not everything is super high tech.
Yeah, you know, I have to admit, the trucks didn't bother me at all. For some reason, and I don't know why, but them wiring up the bombs when they did the terrorist act at the beginning.
Yeah,
the wire that they used, I don't know why, but I was like, that is so 80s. You know, like, I was like, you know, I looked at it, and it didn't bother me that they were using trucks, but it really didn't bother me the way they built bombs. I'm attached to bombs, you know.
I noticed that same thing. I think probably because they did that really close macro shot of them.
Yeah, and I was like, that is like wires, that's like wiring explosives from like World War II.
Yeah.
And so I was a little, not that I've never done anything like that, but I was a little sensitive to the fact that I felt like something there should have been futuristic. I don't know what. I mean, especially since that would be the way they probably do it. But it was just the way that was a very, very typical thing. So I noticed that. I have to admit, it didn't even occur. The trucks didn't even, you know, show up on my radar.
And Ron, I'm desperate to know what you think of the multi-layered composite shoot in Colonial One. In other words, the motion control 360 kind of moves with multiple actors.
I thought, yeah, that was nice. There was a few places in there where they were doing, you know, anytime you're shooting sort of clones or multiple actors, you know, in the same scene playing duplicates of themselves, you know, you try to be smart about it, of course. You try and ideally not have them completely overlap in a lot of places. And for the most part, they didn't, but, you know, if you watch it, they don't shy away from doing it where it makes sense too. So there was the one of the earlier scenes in the episode. There was what's his name, Dean Stockwell, the
yep
guy from Quantum Leap. You know, he's talking, and there's another copy of him in the same scene. They're sort of split between the two, and there was a couple places where they literally had an actor's head right, you know, completely dividing the frame in half as a nice little split line. But there was also the scenes where those two did overlap, and it started off and they weren't overlapping, and I was figuring, all right, they're not going to cross, and this is probably a split. And but then they did cross, and you sort of realize, you know, it was probably done as a blue screen or something like that. But and at that point, then you got to ask the question, all right, if you got two characters that are, you know, the same, living in the same scene, and do you do one of them blue screen and the other one not, or do you do them both blue screen just so it's easier to get everything matching together?
Or do you just roto it?
No, kind of. Yeah, or do you just roto it? Exactly.
I mean, I
to know which way they went.
I know I would probably just, I mean, it would be painful, but given that I only have a transition that I have to deal with, I'd probably roto it.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was, because, you know, right when
but,
they
But Lucy Lawless, who's, you know, from, is one of the characters, the ex New Zealand gladiator chick.
Right.
She has blonde hair in this, right? So it would be there would be some difficult rotos, and I understand for that reason they were keying. And I don't know what you thought, Alex, but I thought the quality of the keys was really, really good.
No, I think that it looked good. I mean,
it did.
Yeah, I thought that whole scene looked really good. I mean, I think that
you look at look at the lighting in that scene, and it's all like heavy blue top light, and I would have shot that blue screen just because then blue spill won't show up, because you can just leave a little bit of it in there. Because everything's got blue spill on it.
The blue spill doesn't.
Yeah, no, I thought it was nice.
Yeah, blue spill doesn't bother me as much as grain from the blue record. It just drives me absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
So
they're shooting on video, and hopefully not a whole lot as much of that.
Well, still, it's still. I mean, I don't know what they're. I mean, they're shooting on 950s. I mean, I was talking to the. I actually met the producer.
Okay.
And he was speaking. Oddly enough, I met him speaking at the podcast convention. So he was talking about the commentary that was there. I mean, I only met him for like, you know, 4.5 minutes. But of course, I asked him what they were shooting on. And they're shooting on 950s, and even on the 950, you're getting still the grain on the blue record is pretty. Egregious, you know, for especially when you're doing fine-tuned stuff. I mean, we've done a bunch of tests on it, obviously, and it's still a pretty unhappy situation. You know, we tend to try to avoid it. I mean, blonde is the one place that you'd shoot blue screen, because you can use the Luma information to extract the hair, you know, much more than you can from the green. The green is kind of a nightmare. Now, did you guys? The other thing that I think that one of the other things about this one, and I don't know why I'm so rough here. I mean, because I think a lot of the stuff, especially the stuff that we were there, was really good. I really felt like the smoke elements that they used and some of the fire elements at the city really could have been practical. And let me say, they really should have been practical.
Early on.
When the camera's moving a lot and you're swimming around or something's moving a lot, I understand making CG fire and CG smoke and everything else. It makes sense. But when it's a near lock off shot.
Yeah.
Just go out and shoot some elements.
And you know, it's interesting because I thought the smoke worked a lot better than the fire did. The fire really pulled me out of it.
Yeah.
So there was absolutely. There was some really good wide angle high matte painting stuff.
Yeah.
That I think that worked, but
is the camp a matte painting, a big matte painting?
There is definitely a big matte painting shot in there. It's high and wide of the camp. It's huge.
Yeah. I thought that looked really nice.
Yeah, I thought
again,
it was great.
Know, just a little bit of camera hover. You know, it's not locked down. It's just got right. A slight bit of movement to give it a sense of somebody's holding the camera behind it all.
Yeah. Just some subtle active elements, and you're good to go.
Mm-hmm. What else? It's a daunting prospect, though, producing that amount of material on an episodic.
It's just brutal. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, as I said, and for the most part, if I wasn't looking for all the effects, I would have been. I mean, I would have noticed them. But they totally support the story. The story is great, and for what they're getting for the, I don't know what the budget is for this stuff, but it's, you know, I'm sure it's, you know, pretty tight. You know, for any of this stuff.
Going back to the, you know, the use of the CG the metallic robots. You know, it's I thought it was really nice where they. Because they weren't afraid to just kind of toss them in almost casually, you know. There were a couple places where they were just sort of in the background, and you didn't, you know, they weren't featured at all, and you didn't really, if you didn't notice that they were there, it wouldn't change the point of the story. but they went ahead and peppered them in a couple different places just to you know keep it in the scene.
Yeah,
that was good, and it sort of shows that they're they acknowledge that. Number one, it probably shows that they've got it down to a reasonably cost-effective thing to do, but also it's it's nice that they're not completely cutting corners to hit their budget.
Yeah.
I guess also I'm so embracing the fact that they spend a lot of time thinking about little stuff. Like, that was probably less evident in this scene. There was there's like a flight room where instead of having your holographic thing and some kind of weird computer displays and everything else, they just have a big light table and they move things around on the light table like a World War II kind of thing. And they go and they constantly find real military reference. And then they take it into the sci-fi realm, and so everything's sort of based on something. So if there's some weird ritual that they have in the show, it's probably because they've heard about some, flight crew on an aircraft carrier doing it. And so then when they do the visual effects stuff, and it's based in something, then it just kind of, it just works. It's not like they're breaking laws of physics right, left, and center. There are consequences to actions. It does have a, I know you were talking earlier about the weight of the robots, but there is a sense of them not just being in the future and guess what, any problem comes along, we'll just solve it with miraculous technology that was invented.
Right. Well, I think that
although going back to the wires that bugged you on the bomb.
Yeah.
Then there's the fact that all the phones that they talk into, they all have these huge cords coming off of them. They're like, bigger than my phone right now.
I haven't had a phone with a cord for a long time.
So, once you see that, how can the trucks bother you?
I thought the, Apollo, the son of the Adama, he's in a fat suit at the moment. Which
yeah, that was gathered. Interesting. I was wondering,
did you notice that, that the real Apollo was in this last one?
Yes.
Apparently he's been in it a few, I guess.
Oh, has he? Yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, that's the, I was telling the guy I was watching with, I was like, that's the real Apollo. He was one of the prisoners, I guess, at the very end.
He's, vice president of, and played in, I don't know whether he'd be playing anymore after the end of that climax, but, you're absolutely right.
So, but the fat suit, interesting. Yeah, I was wondering how much of that was. I just assumed he had to be in it based on the sort of story that I was seeing. But I was wondering how much, if anybody knew how much of that. Certainly the easy stuff of around the belly is fine. But he had pretty, pretty good neck jowl kind of stuff going on too, and I thought it looked pretty good.
He's a really fit, super fit guy. And he was on something I saw interviewed, and he was just joking that he kept on phoning the production office going, look, I'm still fat. Can I lose the weight? And they're like, oh, you're still fat. All right, we'll write you, get you slimmer soon. And he's like, okay, like 8 episodes, I'm still fat.
He wants to show off.
Well, yeah, it must be hard if you like spend all your time getting buffed and then they just stick you in a fat suit.
But yeah, exactly.
Obviously, it's good that they are willing to play. The big thing they did last season, and it's not so much an effects point, it's just a massive story risk, is they jumped ahead 1 year. And so they had an opportunity to suddenly change characters quite a lot. And they did that physical changes on a bunch of them to just really make you believe that it wasn't just filmed the next day. And presumably that'll feature in some future plot line. But the physical effects makeup, trying to get anyone into makeup for, again, episodic television, that can be a real huge ask for the actor.
Yeah.
It takes a long time.
Nobody has it quite as bad as all the characters on Star Trek that had to go through this.
That was insane.
Nothing like the Klingons.
Yeah, totally. Anything else?
Well, I'm gonna have to leave you guys to get on a plane.
Well, I think we're near the end of this one anyway. I think we covered everything.
Yeah, no, I think that was good to kind of quickly talk about all this stuff. I thought the work was great given the resolution limits of what I was looking on.
Yeah. No, I think it's great work. I nit and pick here and there, but I think that overall, for TV, it's fantastic. I mean, how many, you also have to look at how many shots. I mean, like a lot of stuff that, you watch Lost and a lot of the stuff is pretty seamless, but they only have to do like 2 shots, a show, or 3 shots a show or whatever. It's not there all the time. And that's a big undertaking. So very good work.
I guess for me, I just love the fact that I can get an hour and a half of television from iTunes for $2.
Well, there is that.
Let's make the features the same price.
there's a lot of rumors afoot that that's what we're going to see more of. You know, big directors doing stuff for iTunes only. So I think it's on its way.
Yeah, I mean, you covered that pretty well, I think, when you were talking about George Lucas in This Week in Media. But, you know, it really is an astonishing thing to just be so able. I mean, you know, why BitTorrent if you can just go click on pay the $2 and just get it when you want it? I mean, it's...
Absolutely.
It's great television.
And it downloaded quick, too. I mean, I got a decent connection, but it was...
Yeah, it didn't. It was just overnight for me. You know, I just started at night. I came in the morning. It was there. That's, you know, it's a gig download overnight. It was fine. So
there are various people waving outside my window,
saying we got to go,
pointing at watches. So
all right.
Well, I'm going to sign off. You guys keep going.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you so much. Nice to talk to you again, Alex.
All right, take
Missed
care.
Missed you the last week.
All right. Yep.
See you, Mike.
See you guys.
See you later. And Ron, I think we're done.
Yeah, I think that covers it. I don't think we know what we're talking about next time, so we won't bother plugging that.
No, but it'll be something really, really cool. Yep. And something much sooner than the last one.
Yeah, well, hopefully so. And maybe one of these days we'll actually get all four of us back on air again.
It could happen.
John LaBrie is off in India at this point in time. And you know, one of these days we're also all four going to be calling from our home office instead of from... You know, at least a few of us in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Yeah, I don't know when that's going to actually happen. All right. Thank you very much, Ron. Ron, and you wrote a book, didn't you?
I wrote a book. The Art and Science.
When are we getting the new one? Art and Science.
I'm working on it.
Come on, we're waiting with bated breath.
Yeah, well, you know, there's other things to be done, too, so I'm a little busy.
Fine.
One of these days, and, you know, I should start, I got all kinds of little stuff that I'm doing on it, but it just needs to kind of come together now. And then I think I've mentioned I'm trying to get new case studies for it, too, and that's as much of a hassle as anything.
So. As always.
But, you know, if anybody wants more info on it, digitalcompositing.com is set up, and hopefully we'll start to grow a little bit more once I get time to put stuff up there, too, as well.
Great. And I believe that for those of you listening, I think that our move VFX show to the Twit network is imminent. Which,
yeah, very good.
Which will be very fun, so we're very very excited about that. Anyway, that's it. I'm Alex Lindsay, and this is the VFX show, and we'll see you next time. What are we supposed to do, Ron? Are we supposed to...
And everybody should keep it real.
Keep it real.
Thanks, everybody.